And do they think that by the time all protocols are signed, that everything will be in place? So please, I want to reiterate again that the liquid fuel charter, we won't have an in-depth discussion on that today, as the document is still before Cabinet. Cabinet must still decide on the document, they must still look at it and all that, but it is before them. Also, I want to have accepted the apology of the Minister, Deputy Minister and DG, as there is also a special Cabinet meeting today, or Cabinet Committee meeting, I understand, and the DG and the Minister and Deputy Minister have to present before this Cabinet meetings or Cabinet committees or whatever there is. So we have accepted the apology. Is that in fine, committee? Good. Then we've also got some apologies from some of our members, Honourable Sinclair, Mguni, and Honourable Elsa van Lingen, who's still in the Eastern Cape. And maybe the others will join us a bit later. So, as the usual tradition and customs, we're going to introduce ourselves, because we don't want to hear tomorrow that a reliable or informed source has said this and has said that, so that we can put a name by our face and says, no, 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 no. Gareth was there and he said that. So that we don't hear a mysterious source or a very reliable source has said that. My name is Freddie Adams. I'm chairperson of the committee. I'm also a permanent delegate of the Western Cape. Let me go from my left down.
Morning, Lord Maslang, committee for research.
Good morning, I'm Nosdi Wotinezulu, committee secretary.
Good morning, my name is Beth Abrams from Gauteng. I'm a permanent delegate, thank you.
Good morning, I am Matsoko Defano from Limpopo Province.
Good morning, I'm Karen DeVilliers from Eskom.
Hi, my name is Rebecca Murdoch from Ethical.
Morning, Chair, the committee members. I'm Jameson Matize from the Parliamentary Monitoring Group.
Good morning, Nick Garvey from SabiNet.
Good morning, Edmund Conroy,
ANC
Research Unit.
Good morning, Harry Masenga, DOE Minister.
Morning, Mohad Matakana from DOE Clean Energy. Thanks.
Good morning, it's Gareth Sidman from the Ministry of Energy.
Good morning, Chairperson, Honourable Members, Tidiso Makubela, Deputy DG, Hydrocarbons and Energy Planning from the Department of Energy.
Good morning, Professor Nelly Getty from Branch Hydrocarbons and Energy Planning.
Good morning, Tumsan Kamete, permanent delegate from KwaZulu-Natal.
The gentleman there in the red jersey, that's...
Good morning, everyone. My name is Rebecca Mtilene. I'm the committee assistant.
Okay, now we know who's who. DG, you and your team, welcome. DDG, you and your team, welcome to your second home in actual fact, away from Pretoria. And we welcome you here. And the team has been announced. And so we would then hand over to you, DDG, to take us through. Just before the DDG, Honourable Members will have to break at 12:30, as there will be other meetings taking place. But if we are not finished by 12:30, we'll come back at 2 o'clock.
to the same venue. Am I right, Mr. Nizula? Yeah, you'll come back at 2 o'clock. So it depends on you whether you want to come back or let's do the business. By 12:30, we'll have to stop as other meetings are starting at that time. Thank you. TDG, over to you.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. As always, Chairperson, it is a pleasure to come and account to the representatives of the people of South Africa. We always view it as a great honor from our side. And we always come here and go back knowing that we have to redouble our efforts where we have to. And also, you know, we come back from the committee with enough wise counsel to be able to discharge our mandate as a department. Chairperson, I'd like to, from the onset, indicate that the Director General is out of the country and therefore could not be leading this presentation this morning. As Chairperson has also indicated, the apology for the Minister and the Deputy Minister, I think that it would also have been important for them had they been able to be here. Minister is also out of the country, and the Deputy Minister is supporting the Acting Minister in Cabinet. Chairperson, we come to the committee to present to make two presentations. And we will start with the liquid fuels charter progress report, which will be presented by my colleague, Ms. Khusetse One Ligeti. Ms. Ligeti was the project manager for the audit, as members would probably remember. The minister commissioned an audit into compliance by the oil companies with the provisions of the Liquid Fuels Charter. Now, as Chairperson has indicated, the report has been completed, and the report is now before, it's going to be tabled in Cabinet by the Minister. We therefore, Chairperson, are going to spend most of the time just going through the provisions of the charter, but also highlight some of the areas which I believe, you know, they are indisputable in terms of there being shortcomings in the sector in as far as the compliance with the charter. Basically, just to also give background that the economic landscape in the country, in as far as liquid fuels is concerned, I think it's a well-known fact that the landscape still has got a long way to go in terms of changing, that the benefits from the activities in the sector have not reached as many of the people of South Africa as what had been intended. And these basically have the impact, or this has an impact of not spreading job creation wide enough, because as economic opportunities are restricted, you know, it means that small companies can therefore not create the necessary jobs, as well as that the economic development is not diversified enough to reach other provinces. With that, Chairperson, I'd like to hand over to Ms. Ligeti to take us through the presentation this morning, and then Ms. Matekana, who is the Chief Director responsible Clean Energy will then do the presentation on COP17. Thank you.
Thank you, and once again, good morning. The presentation will focus on outlining the brief history of the Liquid Fuels Charter, and to spend more some time on progress to date. And then most importantly, we'll look at all the elements or strategic focus areas of all elements of the charter, and also highlight some few challenges that were experienced as we implemented the charter, and what the plans that the department has in place to address those challenges. And then the presentation will be concluded, and then we'll end by asking if there are any questions. We'll recall that this was the first charter ever that was signed in 2000, and as we reviewed in 2006, when the Petroleum Products Act was amended, the charter was then annexed, and then it became law as it was annexed to the Petroleum Products Act. It is our strategy for advancing empowerment of historically disadvantaged South Africans in the Liquid Fuels Charter. The charter, when it was conceptualized, it was conscious that it wants to adopt the definition of black economic empowerment, which was an integrated strategy that aimed at substantially increasing black participation at all levels of the population. It also embraced the objective of Preferential Procurement Framework Act number 5 of 2000. It also embraced the objective of the Economic Employment Equity Act, the Competition Act, the Skills Development Act, and the Constitution, particularly on equality or in addressing inequality. The core objective of the charter, as it is highlighted on the Energy Policy White Paper, it is to achieve over a 10-year period sustainable presence, ownership or control by historically disadvantaged South Africans of a quarter of all facets of the value chain, or there should be plans to achieve this. As indicated, it has 13 strategic focus areas informed by those pieces of legislation that I've just highlighted. Looking at the progress to date, the department started by looking at previous compliance audit that were conducted since 2000 until 2006, and that then informed the work in auditing compliance by the Liquid Fuel Charter that the minister launched in November 2010, because it was the 10th anniversary of the charter being in existence. We then finalized our compliance audit in April 2011. After auditing, as it is the norm, oil companies were given individual reports to just go through what the audit found. Now the audit report with the recommendations are currently in circulation, as the DDG has already highlighted, for cabinet's attention. In commissioning the audit, we had five objectives in mind to say, let's have an independent, comprehensive, and representative assessment of the state of transformation within the industry against the set charter targets or prescripts. As I said, before we commissioned this audit, we looked at the work that was done up until 2006. And in 2002, there were certain commitments to say, as we implement the charter, let's look where the shortcomings were. So the report also had to account to all the amendments that were made to the Act so that we did not reinvent the wheel unnecessarily. And then also say, let's identify where bottlenecks are in the implementation of the charter such that when we come up with a new charter, then we'll understand how then to address the said challenges. And then, again, we say, having taken stock, we will in the next framework have a standardized criteria to assess and monitor transformation and compliance with the petroleum and liquid fuels charter throughout the value chain. But most importantly, we say, let's find a way of capacitating the department to conduct annual surveys, because almost all the surveys that we did, we had to find a consultant to do it. But over time, we have a view to say we will be building capacity within the department. And then, most importantly, we will be developing and implementing strategies that will optimally contribute to achieving transformation in the industry. Here, the focus. The focus now is on specific charter elements in terms of the charter prescripts, those 13 strategic focus areas. We have ownership, we have control, we have employment equity, we have capacity building, we have procurement. I will be taking them step by step just to outline that which the charter seeks to achieve and then how we have been measuring that over time. In terms of ownership, the charter had to focus on saying we will have 25 ownership and control of all facets of the industry that the parties to the charter are seeking to bring over a 10-year period. What does that mean? It means HDSA's owning in total at the end of the 10-year, which is 2010, not less than 25% of the aggregate value of the equity of the various entities that hold the operating assets of the South African oil industry. The parties to the charter then agreed to say, if we were to measure this, it will be the measurement will be the extent of the achievement of this target of 10%, if the aggregate value of it will be based on the asset value as per audited accounts of the entities concerned. How has this been measured? By looking at the legal and effective shareholding through voting rights, rights to economic interest, and how sustainable these transactions were. And then in terms of control, the companies, signatories to the charter, made a commitment to say, business entity control can be achieved in a number of ways, either by majority shareholding, that is a 50 plus one share, and effective controlling shareholding, a majority of board of directors or shareholders agreement. So how is this assessed as we do the audit? We look at the percentage of black people in directorship positions, both at executive and non-executive levels, or including the independent directors. The charter also had a focus on saying, we need a supportive environment if we were to empower participants. So what is it that we aimed at? It said the signatories appointed managers who will understand the spirit and the background under which the policies or the charter was conceived to create an enabling and supportive environment for business success. How is this measured? By looking at the qualitative analysis of the criteria which facilitates the creative of transformative business environment. Building of capacity, which is commonly known as skills development. Signatories to the charter said they will build capacity of employees and report annually on progress, as well as interfacing with statutory bodies such as CITAS. And then in terms of assessing whether we are achieving the set targets, a quantitative analysis of skill spend on employees, learnership programs in place, the opportunities afforded to black employees, and training opportunities for black employees. And then on employment equity, there should be a concerted effort to identify candidates, particularly HDSAs, for overseas placement and training. There should be a concerted effort in identifying a talent pool and fast-tracking it. There should be a concerted effort as we build capacity to include females and even implement mentorship programs and also setting and publishing demanding targets. A quantitative analysis of employment equity report submitted to the Department of Labor. It looked at when assessing if we are on track in terms of achieving the set objective. We know that money gives you options, or you need capital to access opportunities, given that this sector is capital intensive. So financing was also a key strategic focus area. And signatories made a commitment to say there will be implementation of internal and external financing mechanisms for giving HDSA companies access to equity ownership within the South African context and in engaging in viable strategic partnership with HDSA companies. So when we assess this, we look at the debt schedules for BEE participants. And then in terms of procurement, we look at how supportive policies facilitate and leverage the growth of HDS companies, including crude and other products. So in assessing this, we check if HDS wholesalers have been given an opportunity to procure crude. We analyze how much was spent on BEE procurement. And terms of credits for HDSA was also the strategic focus area. We look at whether there was preferential payment terms for suppliers, which looks at the quantification of the effective benefit of preferential payment terms to suppliers. Key to this industry is access to infrastructure. Were there opportunities for HDSA to access opportunities or to access the necessary infrastructure, like bathing facilities and so forth? Basically, that will also be looking at how many BEEs own or participate or have access facilities required to enable them to trade. That it was looked at for refining capacity and retailing. Importantly, we look at how sustainable are these transactions. It was a commitment made in 2000 to say the long-term viability and adaptability through a presence across the value chain is critical. Whether there's recession, the transaction must still be sustainable. The debt-to-equity ratio or the financial indicators were analyzed. for any policy that you develop, you will have an idea of what you want to achieve, and only when you implement do you realize challenges.
Chairperson, if I may hear, because what Ms. Liketi was doing was basically giving an indication on how the audit was done. And we believe that it is important that we give this and leave it with the committee, because when the report is published, there are going to be contestations to say that the manner in which the audit was done was unscientific and all of that. But I think now this gives the committee an indication that when we're looking at, you know, refining, this was the measure that we were using. And so that there is no dispute about the methodology. But what we are now getting into is the, I guess, the sensitive area of the what were the findings, and the findings that we are at liberty to share. I think this is where now the presentation is headed. Thanks.
There was, however, some challenges where we were compliance was not monitored regularly. And that could explain why industry did what it did. And they knew that there are sometimes no serious consequence for non-compliance. And there has been uneven compliance. Success is not consistent through the value chain. If you look at retailing, at wholesaling, at refining, or even like wholesaling, crude procurement didn't fare well as it was envisaged, or did not happen at all.
Excuse me, ma'am. Yeah, you know, look, we've asked for a progress update on this because I think the challenges was what the committee has set out at the public hearings we had with the department and everybody. So I don't think you have to go into so much depth or detailed into the challenges, because challenges were raised by the various stakeholders, wholesalers, retailers, you know, the access to finance which people had, the access to birth, the access to storage facilities, for argument's sake at Durban Harbour, Durban Port, and the access to finance, DFI financing, and those type of things. So we've got a bit of an update that from your side, committee, that the charter is now in front of cabinet. There has work has been done into that. So I think we can only wait for the final document to return from cabinet. DDG, I don't know if you agree with me on that, but you can just go through it. If you want to go through it, but I mean you don't have to go into in depth, because these are the challenges that the committee has also put forward when we had the joint public hearing, the 2-day session.
Okay. Yep. Another challenge is the financial sustainability of transactions, fronting, no support for HDSA wholesalers, access to infrastructure. There are still barriers to entry, access to finance, infrastructure, transparency in pricing, still transfer to retailers. That's why we've got a lot of change of hands at retail level. BEE is narrow-based, no women representation, and then the abuse of the HDSA definition, which includes white females. We've seen a transfer of ownership from white females to males. But in addressing the challenges, the department is prioritizing recommendation on the compliance audit report whilst we are awaiting the approval of cabinet and also the review of code of good practice. and then we'll soon start with the development of a new empowerment framework, and then also capacitate the framework for monitoring, evaluation, and compliance, standardized transformation empowerment criteria, and collaborate with the DTI to align the charter with the revised BEE Code of Practice. And we acknowledge that having learned from the shortcomings of the charter being the first charter, we will make sure that it's measurable and we preserve important cornerstone of the charter in its current format. Thank you.
Thank you very much. DDG, anything you want to add before I open up for questions?
I think, Chairperson, the only thing that I can add is that there seems to be a feeling of or lack of ownership of this charter. I mean, the charter was entered into voluntarily by all the parties. No one really was you know, they felt it as an imperative that this has got to happen. And what has been, I guess, disappointing is the fact that seemingly that spirit seems to be fading. And I think that's where we would need to be asking questions going forward, is to what happened to that spirit of the charter. Thanks.
Thank you very much, CDG. Anyone from the ministry side? Nothing. Mr. Singer? Nothing. Okay, good. We've been joined by a very handsome gentleman all the way from I don't know which side of the country. If you can just introduce himself to us, then we can also know who he is.
Morning, everybody. So I was deployed to programming. My name is Jomonyamba. I'm from Mpumalanga.
You know, the handsome gentleman's name is Jomo Archibald Nyambi, and he's from the Mpumalanga province. Honorable members, it is now your turn to ask questions, and the department can answer. Honorable Gamede, I've got. Honorable Dikhali, I've got. Okay, Honorable Gamede.
Thanks, Chair. The first issue is that what has been said by the Chair and the DDG, that the Charter still has to serve before Cabinet, which then poses a challenge that we still have to deal with it. We cannot really go in deep with it. But I just want to raise one question, and my concern and my view with regard to control and ownership. I see even with regards to the charter, you have control and even ownership as part of owning the majority of shares. I've got another view. Control to me means even operational, you know, running that company or sort of, that is control to me. Ownership would only rest with being a director, because you attend meetings as and when they are called or quarterly. But if you're in control of a company, you are a general manager, you are a managing director, you are there in the technical department, that is actually control, because when it comes to the board, it's just for a decision of what has been done by the operational staff. So I don't know whether you could develop that document and take it further about control, because I see most of the companies, the companies, that is why they go down, they rush for major shareholding and leave the company to be run by other people, which means they then don't control.
Bodhali?
Thank you, Chairperson. I have a very serious problem. In all the companies, the women are the ones who are always in pain. They've never been in comfort. So I just want to know that what is it that the department is doing to make sure that these very important people join those that are in the world of milk and honey. I heard the chairperson when you say this is still, the charter is still before the cabinet, but as they have raised this challenge, maybe they can help. Thanks.
Honorable Nambi and Honorable Abel.
Thanks, Chairperson. As we have quite correctly indicated that we happen to have an opportunity to deal with the retailers, I have only one question. It's in relation to the challenges as reflected in the presentation. Do you have some challenges that are not part of those that we have in front of us here? Or to the challenges that we have in front of us, do you think this is the only challenges that we have, or you decided to reflect what we have here? Because when we have that 2 days workshop or meeting that the chairperson, a lot of things transpired in that workshop. So if we can be clarified in terms of what is being reflected here, whether are we going to consider what we have in front of us, or we have some of those that are not reflected here, so that we can have a better sense. And if you can be a little bit elaborative in terms of what you have in front of us, that you believe these are the only real challenges.
Honorable Abrams.
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson. Yes, I think the challenges is, I wanted to ask a definition of the HDSA, but I see that you've already got it here as an abuse of it. But I see one exclusion is the people with disability. Do they form part of this or not? Because you haven't mentioned them. You mentioned it. Oops, sorry. And so if I can just know, what do you have plans for the people with a disability? Thank you.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. As indicated, Chair, there are constraints to the level of detail to which we can go, but we will try and deal with the question to the best of our ability, given the constraints. I think, as indicated by Honorable Gamede, the operational control is an issue. And what we have seen is that in the shareholding, basically the partners, the BE partners in most of the companies, they do exactly that. They attend meetings, they pass the resolutions, but if you were to ask them how many liters do you actually allocate to company X or to BEs and so on, you may find that they'd be found wanting, or what are the challenges in terms of the infrastructure that they actually co-own. You know, what are the main problems in the refinery? Why are you having unplanned outages and so on? I think that capacity has still not been developed. Now, the impact of that is you will see it when there is a possible change of ownership, when now the main shareholder wants to sell. You will find that the BEE company is not able to then take over the operation and run it sustainably, because they have not invested in that operational experience. What also we were thinking is that 25% may need to be relooked. Because even in other sectors, 26% is the norm or is the minimum. which then gives you some rights within, you know, the decision making. 25% is one just shy of that, you know, minority shareholder control. On the so definitely, I think going forward, we will have to encourage operational control. This is happening, by the way, in the wholesaling sector. You are finding that there are BEE companies or HTSA companies that basically operate independently, and they are able to take an order from crude oil, what is required, and bring the ship to the country and actually deliver the crude oil to the customer. So that is beginning to happen. But I think at manufacturing level, we definitely that has not started. The issue of women, I think the minister has raised it many times. You know, her discomfort with the level of participation of women in decision making in the companies. We have a situation in the country where basically none of the CEOs of the oil companies are run by, at least at CEO level, are run by women. I think it is an indictment on the industry. At some point, PetroSA had an acting CEO who unfortunately had to retire, but she was the only one at the time. We therefore, Chairperson, are looking forward to the decision that the board of PetroSA will make when it comes to the chief executive going forward, and other companies. But I think the state also has been leading by example in this regard, particularly on the at the board level. On the what was raised by Honorable Nyambi on whether we have been identified all the issues, those areas that I think they, you know, the honest answer is there are some areas that we have not covered here, partly because we believe that there will be contestations. The areas that are covered are those that we felt there should be no contestation whatsoever on them, one. Secondly, we were also constrained by the fact that this now is in the cabinet, the report itself is in the cabinet system. So there was that constraint. But to the level, I think we can respond to specific questions. We are aware, for example, that on the retailers, one thing that, if now I talk as the controller of petroleum products, the license applications that we are receiving are worrying because they are reflecting a particular trend where basically a particular section of our population is applying for most of these retail sites, and we don't believe that it is sustainable. And also on retailers, there is another phenomenon, which is the volumes. You can have 50% of the sites owned by HDSAs, but you find that the volumes that those sites pump is actually 10% of the total volume that is consumed in the country. So these are, I think on retailers, these are challenges that you are having, where the most lucrative sites are still unreachable, or the access by HDSA is basically the playing field is not level where that is concerned. On the issue of people with disabilities, I think it's an area where we are not really doing as well as we should. There is only one wholesale, for example, application that we have received from an association of people with disabilities, and that application was processed, but as to whether the entity is actually trading, I think I would need to check on that. I don't have that information, but there was, when it was presented to us, it was an association of people with disabilities, and that they wanted to trade as a and benefit basically the association. But I would need to then check on whether they are actually trading at this point in time. Chairperson, I think I've covered, and I do apologize if I'm not as candid as the document itself has got quite a lot of information. I believe once it's released, we could, within a week, be back in the committee to basically take the committee through it. Thanks.
No, thank you, TDG. In actual fact, once the document is released, we will then have another bite of public hearings on the document, because you know, there was a whole outcry from the specifically from the HDSA side, but also from women in oil and women in petroleum regarding this, that they are not recognized. Also regarding fronting. Now, there was a serious outcry of fronting in that, and I hope that Cabinet and or the drafters of the document has applied their mind to what came out of that public hearings. And also the outcry was also one of the things that was raised, which I don't pick up in the challenges, was that the charter should be reviewed not just every 10 years as was with the other charters, but it should be reviewed, if not biannually, but maybe every 5 years in that. But members, are there any more questions from your side? Nothing. DDG, you have escaped this one very likely. When the charter comes out, then we'll go definitely full out for that. But as I said, we will have, as the charter has been released, we will have another bite with industry and to find out, guys, what you have asked for, are you being satisfied? It's now been documented. But thank you very much for you and the director. And we can now go over to our second part of our program.
Thank you very much. At this stage, we would hand over to Ms. Matefan to make a presentation on COP17. Thank you.
we're talking about clean fuel and clean energy. Clean energy. So I hope that she's brought some clean energy.
She's the chief director responsible for anything clean in energy, including energy efficiency.
We are searching for the technology. I think we can take a 5-minute comfort break. Those of you who want another bite of tea, coffee, and some juice, or that wants to go and attend to the human call of nature, please do that, and we'll be back at about 25 to 11 so that we can start with our next presentation.
Thank you.
Okay, ladies and gentlemen, we're back to back in action. Is there any documents about for this TDG? Sorry, my computer has decided to pack up, so I didn't have, I haven't got any. I believe it's forwarded to us, Chris, the documents, but I couldn't open my machine. Thank you. Yeah, no, they've given me two of this liquid fuel charter, so I can give you that one. Thank you. Thanks for the trade-off, Mr. Michelini. Chief Director. Honourable members, this is we have requested as committee the department to come and brief us, as we know that energy is also very key and a pivotal role player in the climate change COP17. COP17 is Conference of Parties. Okay, the COP17. That's going to take place in Durban, and we've asked the Department of Energy to brief us on the progress report, on the progress going to COP 17, and so they will give us a presentation on that, and I'll leave it over into the capable hands of the Chief Director.
Okay, thanks, and good morning once more. The presentation outline would cover the background of the energy sector, which is the specific focus for today's presentation. Before I get in detail to the presentation, I need to highlight the point that the focus of the presentation would only be on the energy sector as a sector department. The overall COP17 lies within the mandate of DECO, and the detail in relation to the South African position paper, which is the negotiation tool in December within the Department of Environmental Affairs. Then I will move from the background to Africa Energy Ministers Conference that we have just hosted in September. Then I will touch on the flagship or legacy project that we will look back and say this is because of COP17. Then I will touch on the United Nations Framework Climate Change Convention side event, then the South African Climate Change Response Expo side event, the partnerships and collaboration, the DOE delegation accreditation, summary of progress and linkages with other departments. If you look at the presentation, it's a bit thick, but I'll try to summarize it as possible, not to be too long and tiring. Following the COP16 meeting and outcomes and preparation of COP17 in Durban, the Department of Energy approved the establishment of both internal and external technical steering committee, which were established in April. Whilst we're still on this one, the reason why we needed to have both the internal and external technical committees was to ensure that the whole energy sector is represented. Internally is to make sure that all the policy imperatives from the different sections are aligned with COP17 requirements. From the external committee was to ensure that the whole energy sector is represented as we move forward to COP17. Whatever that we will be saying, we would be saying as a team rather than the Department of Energy or an individual organization. The purpose of the internal COP17 meeting, as I've already indicated, was also to reflect on the vision and mission of the department based on the policy imperatives. And the committee was tasked to develop and implement energy sector work plan for COP17, as like with other sector departments like water affairs, defense, all the departments that are serving on the Interministerial Committee on Climate Change. And also to make sure that the outcome or the output of what would be presented at COP17, there is ownership and concurrence as a sector. The background, we had the high-level thematic panel discussions for energy, which were submitted to the UNFCCC. I need to highlight the point that there are two parallel processes for the COP17. We have got the United Nations process. We have got the South African climate change process. Within the UN process, it's governed by the rules of the United Nations as its mandate on the climate change convention. Within the South African climate change response expo was to ensure that all South Africans would be in a position to participate alongside the United Nations processes, because the United Nations processes are limited and not everybody would be in a position to participate on that. We further had 18 projects, demonstration projects, which were also coordinated to be showcased at the Climate Change Response Expo, which are organized or led by the Department of Environmental Affairs. This is the department in charge of the expo, but as sector departments, we are expected to coordinate and make sure that our sectors are represented as led by DEA. Then we had 24 thematic panel discussions or roundtables that would be taking place and are being developed into fully fledged concepts, which you will refer to the Excel in terms of the site events, where it's reflecting even the dates and what the themes are. The panelists for discussions will include ministers, DGs, CEOs, and technical experts, government and private sector representatives from various organizations, both nationally and internationally. It would not only be limited to the South African participation. And on the feedback on the African Energy Ministers Conference, which was hosted together with the African Union during the week of the 15th to the 16th September at the Sandton Convention Center, we had a total of 45 countries participated, with 35 ministers and deputy ministers and more than 200 delegates from government and business sector, both locally and internationally, who attended the conference. Though the focus was on African issues rather than the global aspects. The aim of the conference was to provide a high-level platform for ministers as decision makers to have an opportunity to deliberate and map a way forward on access to energy for Africa in preparation for COP17. The chair has already indicated that energy contributes a lot to the climate change. If you look at the greenhouse gas emissions, energy contributes around 80% of the GHGs. And the main objective was also to promote sustainable energy access for Africa in line with the United Nations Declaration of 2012 and the International Year of Energy Access for All. I think it's no longer a debate that Africa is the most darkest continent in the world. So those are the issues that the ministers had to deal with in terms of how do we make it moved from the stand as it is, being the darkest continent, to being lighter in the evening. And some of the key issues was also to note that Africa contributes less than 4% of global carbon dioxide emissions, but it is the continent most vulnerable to climate change and least prepared to deal with the with its effects. Some of the things that we have seen, we all witnessed what is happening in Somalia in terms of the drought, issues around food security, and it's not the only country that is being affected. And indeed, climate change will further threaten food and energy security through high temperatures, extreme events, and changes in rainfall. We see other countries are already experiencing floods and all that. And one of the key issues in terms of the recent statistics that came out is we have got 585 million people who do not have access to modern energy in sub-Saharan Africa. And the question was, what do we do to make sure that by the time we get to COP17, as Africa, we have a position to deal with these issues and address this big number that we're seeing in front of us in terms of providing the modern energy. And energy poverty is hindering development in sub-Saharan countries and is a barrier to economic growth and the successful achievement of Millennium Development Goals. And I strongly believe that you would agree with me that definitely it affects lack of energy affects the economic growth. We all experienced the load shedding and how it affected business during the 2008 year. And the following topics informed the basis of a detailed deliberation through specific or scientific papers on issues on the ground: climate resilience and energy access as a top priority for Africa. Within the UNFCCC, we have got the groups in terms of the negotiation, in terms of the members of the parties. And one of those, we have got the Africa group. So this conference was also to address issues within the Africa group, but with a specific focus on the energy matters. And also a process towards universal access to modern household energy services. since the United Nations has declared 2012 as the year, the International Year of Access to Energy for All, what do we do as Africa to make sure that at the COP17 we're saying this is our position as the Africa group on energy matters? Because without energy, we're lagging behind in terms of economic growth and development. And also illustrating financial instruments for low carbon energy investment in Africa. If we were to invest into the low carbon energy investment, there is no country that has done that alone. We would require support internationally in terms of financial instruments. Hence, we need a deliberation to make sure that as Africa, we stand together to say as we move forward in terms of our own policy imperatives from country to country, we agree and we stand a position to say, based on the outcome of COP16 in relation to the Green Fund, how do we access that for the benefit of Africa as a whole without compromising any of our development needs? Then the path to energy security was one key element that was discussed, building a sustainable energy portfolio. The regional power trade was also discussed in detail in terms of how it can make sure that we create an environment of interconnectivity and integration from country to country. SADC, the Eastern Power Pool, the Southern Power Pool, as well as the Central Power Pool. There has been work done, but in terms of integrating those so that there is synergy from region to region, how do we make sure that we utilize the regional power trade for our benefit and also to grow the investment? And one of the points as well was to secure resources for energy investment, as I've already indicated, on the climate finance for green growth, which was the part, one of the key agreements from COP16. And a formal report on all the conference proceedings is being finalized as we speak. And also, there was a need that one of the key things in line with the COP17 negotiations is capacity building. And the conference was preceded by the capacity building event, which was coordinated by the United Nations Energy, specifically for the support team for our political leaders or our principals who were attending the conference in terms of the key issues that we need to be prepared for when we're going for the COP17. And the focus of the training was on training tools for sustainable energy for technical teams, project managers, and others who are expected to address the following key factors. Like, as I've indicated, we have got a duty as a country to make sure that we meet the Millennium Development Goals. And we're still lagging behind in terms of the skills that are available in all our countries. UN has declared 2012 as the year for International Year of Energy Access for All. Those who have to be doing work at implementation level or at operational level, they need to be capacitated to ensure that ultimately we are able to meet the targets that have been set so far. The issue or the focus in terms of the key factors that were looked at was capacity building in energy planning. How do we plan for our energy needs as countries? And what are the key things that we need to look at in totality? Second, interactive demonstration of Clean Energy Solution Center. We're all talking about clean energy. I mean, what would be the better position or the better way or approach in terms of addressing the clean energy solutions in a continent as a whole? And how do we measure the energy poverty in our countries? Because definitely it's there. We still have areas that are not yet connected. How do we make sure that that is being done accordingly and appropriately? Technology needs assessment training. You move from one country to the other, then the technology needs would vary. We know that in terms of, like, for example, wind, it's not spread across the country. There are specific countries where we have that resource. In terms of solar as well, there would be other countries that have enough of that resource. Others are best in hydro. So those are the things that you need to assess to say, out of the resources that are available within the continent, how do we leverage and benefit as a whole or as a continent? And also preparing and business plans for financing. because as we seek support from the international partners, we need to be better prepared in terms of sending appropriate proposal or proposals or business plans that are bankable for the projects that we are proposing, and also guide to report energy in terms of research and development in relation to budget and expenditure statistics. The key outcomes of the Africa Energy Ministers Conference was to identify energy solutions that will ensure that Africa has the resources to achieve economic growth and development while simultaneously addressing the dual challenges of mitigation and adaptation to climate change in partnership with the developed world, to create a sustainable program for universal energy access, to advance on the scaling up of the energy systems that are less emission intensive. And whilst we're still on this one, as South Africa, I think we have already moved a mile in terms of going into scaling up the energy systems that are less emission intensive. The release of the integrated resource plan is taking us towards that ultimate goal of ensuring that we reduce our emission reduction footprint. In the integrated resource plan, you have noted that now in terms of the clean energy generation, we will have 42% of clean energy generated. And on, in addition to that, we have got 6% of import hydro, which brings us to the need of the regional power power trade, because in South Africa, we are a water-scarce country. But if we collaborate with other countries that have enough hydro, like, for example, the DRC, the Congo River has been, there has been a lot of work that has been done in terms of what hydro energy can be produced. And it has been confirmed that there is a potential of 40,000 gigawatts that can come out of it, and it can supply 80% of Africa as a continent. So those are the issues that have been looked at. And also agree on solutions for infrastructure, provision of finance, and the expansion of new and clean technologies for developing countries, and in particular, in order to meet the Millennium Development Goals. And I hope you are aware that in terms of the MDGs, it's only China that has reached the 2015 target, but other countries, even some of the developed countries, are still lagging behind. But Africa, it's far, far next to reaching these MDG goals. Moving forward, parallel to the conference, we also had Minister of Economic Development, Mr. Ibrahim Patel, officially opening the site event on green economic development in South Africa. Africa Great Opportunity Household Cookstoves, which has a potential for to create employment while closing the gap on energy access. For the areas that are not yet connected in terms of the electrification, instead of addressing only the connection, we need also to take into account the issue around the health impacts in terms of the GHG emissions. Hence, we introduced the parallel sessions of household cookstoves, which are green tagged in terms of the emissions that are released from this. And one of the focus was, if we have our own manufacturing companies within the country, we're addressing an energy gap, but we're creating employment on the other side. If these stoves are created or manufactured within the country, we're addressing the issue around job creation as well as closing the gap in terms of energy access, including even reducing the emissions thereof. The conference was just was not the first step in terms of what has been done within the energy sector within the continent. It was a build-on on the work of the Forum of Energy Ministers of Africa, FEMA, several sub-regional committees, the Economic Committee of West Africa, ECOWAS, the East African Community, and the Economic Community of Central States, including the SADC. It further sought to contribute to the development of energy strategies aimed at realizing the NEPAD objectives, namely achieving the growth and success of African economy in realizing Africa's great potential in energy. If you look at in terms of the world solar band, the continent has like solar in abundance. Some of our countries have hydro in abundance. So we need to leverage on the resources that are already there, taking into account that initially the capital cost would be a bit high, but in the long term, it will pay off. And this conference resulted in a joint declaration, as I outlined in the slides to follow, but I wouldn't get into detail in relation to the declaration. I just selected a few, but the declaration document has been forwarded that can go in detail. And one of the things was to push for developing and developed countries to accelerate the implementation of both climate change adaptation and mitigation interventions in order to address energy needs, which I've already touched. So most of the things that are on this slide, I've already indicated on. And I need to highlight the point that partnership and financing from developed world will be critical if Africa will be able to rid itself to serve poverty levels and achieve genuine green growth. So I will touch on some of the extract that I took from the declaration. As I've already touched that it was building on the work that has already been done, one of the things was to recall the Maputo Declaration adopted by the African energy ministers at their inaugural conference in Maputo in November 2010, and reiterating the commitments that resulted, including the formation of Conference of Energy Ministers of Africa. And they further welcomed the progress achieved in the establishment of the regional power pools and the programs, initiatives, and partnerships at both regional and sub-regional level geared towards...
Excuse me, Chief Director. no, thank you very much. I'm just wondering, TDG and Chief Director, the key outcomes of the AEMC, I think members had the privilege of getting that... outcomes and what happened at the conference through GCIS. So I'm wondering whether we should go further with the AEMC, or shouldn't we just go straight to the progress on the COP17?
Okay.
Is that members? Do I sum it up correctly for you? Okay. Is that fine with us?
Yes, it's fine.
Thank you very much.
And if you were to look at this spreadsheet in terms of the energy side events, I need to highlight the point that these are the thematic discussions and roundtable discussions that would be happening with the time slots already. Let me just open it. Do we all have? Okay. There.
First of all, is the committee invited to all of this?
Yes, the invitations are still coming.
Oh, okay.
But I would request the secretariat to start with the accreditation of the committee members to make sure that the accreditation process is dealt with within your own procurement processes. But in terms of the invitation, you would be invited to any, and in terms of your own subcommittees, you will delegate who would be representing who where. Okay, this is the draft program that has already been sent to Department of Environmental Affairs, being the coordinator of the South African Climate Change Response Expo. What you're seeing in front of you is what we have proposed, the slots in terms of the final slots, the time. Can change because it's still going to be integrated into the overall South African booklet. So this is what we have proposed so far. Okay, number one, we will have the DNA Forum workshop together with the United Nations Climate Change Convention, which the event would be on the discussion of challenges and opportunities for the carbon credits. I hope that you are aware that in terms of how we're doing in relation to the Clean Development Mechanism. So far, Africa as a continent, or even in particular in South Africa, we're not doing so well in terms of the Clean Development Mechanism. And it's one of the key focus that we need to deliberate in detail to see how we can improve the status as is. In South Africa, as we speak, we only have seven projects that are registered through the executive board in terms of having qualified for the CDM processes. And most of the projects are still within the pipeline. And one of the challenges that mostly the developers are experiencing is high transaction costs in terms of getting to be registered in the CDM processes. And we're looking at addressing or deliberating this discussion point with around 120 participants. And the workshop is already confirmed for the 26th and 27th of November. And in both days, it would be full days. And the contact person on the coordination from the South African side is Ms. Lindiwe Chauke. And we will have an official opening by the minister. Where it's not possible, the minister can delegate or request anybody to come and open. It's just an indication. It can still change. And we have got the energy endeavor that we are coordinating with the International Renewable Energy Agency, where we're trying to create an interactive session for business. This would open for 3 days a week, where business within the energy sector would have an opportunity to interact on one-to-one in terms of how can the energy sector be improved. And as well, the participation would be open to most of our South African business people. Then moving from there, we would have the energy efficiency and renewable energy capacity building training, which we're coordinating together with IRENA as well. And I need to highlight the point that most of the things where we partnered, it's not only Department of Energy that is bearing the costs. In terms of the way the coordination is done, it's also to leverage from the available resources within the sector. Most, like the UNCCC, the United Nations will bear the cost for almost everything. DOE or the country would participate as a host country. In terms of our collaboration with the International Renewable Energy Agency, the costs are within the IRENA logistics. And within the Africa session, it needs to be indicated that IRENA has picked out South Africa, having noted the work that has been done so far in relation to our integrated resource plan. Most of the countries have not yet been in a position to approve or release what South Africa has produced in terms of our integrated resource plan up till 2030. And if you look at the climate change processes, the ultimate goal is to have a map out in terms of how the energy sector is doing or how the climate change process is doing until 2050. And in terms of the capacity building that is proposed for the 28th of November, at that particular time that is indicated there. And one of the things that we're dealing with IRENA is to make sure that the capacity building is not only focusing on the technical people within the energy sector, but includes even our media people to make sure that as they report or reflect they ensure that they understand the sector very well. So it will include our media relations participants as well. Then we will have the Building Energy Efficient Seminar, which focuses on the discussions on options for green and energy efficiency measures in buildings. And in this, I need to highlight that we have one of the projects within the energy efficiency building best practice. There is a project in Atlantis here in Cape Town, which we would want to showcase as South Africa because it's already demonstrating the best practices within the country in terms of the green building sector, in terms of the way it's been done. Then we will further move in terms of the diversification of energy mix towards a low carbon economy. We all acknowledge the point that the move towards the low carbon economy is still new to most of the countries. We need to learn from other countries that are already advanced in this sector. And this one is earmarked or scheduled to happen on the 29th of November at this time, and the contact person is there. Discussion on the diversification of the country's energy mix to ensure that energy security and responding to climate change would be the key issues that would be part of. And like as I take you through this schedule, I would highlight to the committee that you are more than welcome to indicate where you would want to participate in roundtable discussions or be part of the panel discussion, so that as we formalize the program, then we would be sending briefs in terms of what the focus of the discussion would be. Then we will have the energy policy seminar with the discussion on the impact of energy access on gender, job creation, and poverty alleviation. This is one of the things that we all acknowledging that we need to make sure that as we deliver, we address issues of job creation and also gender disparity, including poverty alleviation. These are not things that they are real on the ground. So we need to be addressing these issues so that as we move to implement, we directly deal with those issues on the ground. And on this one, we are assisted by the International Energy Agency, with the basis that it has done several studies across the world in terms of how they manage to deal with these issues and how South Africa can improve its status in relation to issues around gender within the energy sector, job creation in line with the poverty alleviation part of it. And this is earmarked for or scheduled for the 5th of December. Then we will have a further discussion in relation to the nuclear energy seminar, with the focus on the nuclear energy safety measures. And this would give us a platform to further debate issues around nuclear. I think it's already clear that in South Africa, there is a position that we will also include nuclear as one of the energy sources. So we cannot afford to shy away from the country's position in terms of the nuclear issues. And safety is one of the key elements that have become the center of discussions. And on this, we would also be focusing on the Fukushima as being the recent case relating to safety issues. Then we will have the Carbon Capture and Storage Seminar, where we are addressing the challenges and opportunities within the CCS technology. This is still a new technology which South Africa is already participating in, and there are some pilots that have been researched through, and we earmarked participation of around 100 people, which the discussion would happen on the 1st of December. And also, you would realize that we're trying to make sure that the whole energy sector is touched on, not only focusing on one energy source. Hence, you will see different technologies being discussed. Then we will have the transport fuel efficiency and biofuel. The discussion will be on the promotion and importance of fuel efficiency, biofuels options for climate change mitigation in the transport sector. And on this one as well, we are earmarking the participation of 100 people, and also happening on the 1st of December. So basically on the 1st of December we'll have three sessions. The one on the carbon capture storage, we'll have the transport fuel efficiency and biofuels, we'll have the energy efficiency information gala dinner in the evening, just to create that environment of networking and also bridging the information gap on energy efficiency in building. So we anticipating or planning to have the energy efficiency monitoring system, which we're collaborating with SALGA, to be launched on this specific day in the evening. Then the 10th one, we have got the Clean Energy Financing Seminar. As I've already indicated that as we move through or towards the low carbon economy, finance remains key. Hence, we need to partner or forge partnerships with the financing institutions. So the focus would be on financing sustainable energy. And this is scheduled for the 2nd of December. It would also include the clean energy financing, clean energy and energy efficiency financing seminar, discussion on possible options to finance clean energy and energy efficiency. This is to ensure that, I mean, how do we lower the current capital costs, which are too high for the clean energy sector, to make sure that as we roll out, we are not put on standstill or we are stopped by lack of financing. So we get all the facts in terms of those who have already rolled out successfully in the sector. And this would be also on the 2nd of December. And if you look at the spreadsheet, the organization in terms of those we're partnering with, there are a lot of organizations that are not reflected. This is still a draft in terms of the booking arrangements, but the collaboration would, the final program would include all those who are participating in terms of just seeing DOE. DOE is just the lead sector in terms of finalizing the logistics and booking arrangement as the energy sector responsible government department. It's not like it's the site events falling within the Department of Energy. It's a team work. Then we will further address the access to energy seminar, as we have already discussed about areas that are not electrified. How do we make sure that access, the, like for example, the 2012, which has been declared the International Year of Energy Access for All in Africa, how do we make it happen? And the deliberation in relation to this has already taken place within the Africa Energy Ministers Conference, and the position is within the declaration to make sure that as we push forward during the COP17, what would be the position within the energy sector for COP17. Then there will be a focus on the renewable energy seminar with the focus on SADC. That brings an element of the regional power pools. How do we create an environment or a platform of interconnectivity between the countries with specific purpose on the renewable energy plans and strategies? Because if we have varying plans which are not speaking to each other, we would have a problem in terms of agreeing in terms of issues around interconnectivity and economic growth. Hence, we need to further deliberate. Then there would be issues around market development seminar for clean energy. That's where the issue around the carbon market comes in, scaling up market mechanism challenges and opportunities for energy policies. And this is scheduled for the 5th of December. Then we will talk about the energy policies, where the focus would be on the gaps, locking the energy sector and cost delaying action in terms of how we need to implement. Then we will get into the specifics, the renewable energy technologies, solar energy seminar, the energy efficiency seminar, which are indicated on the dates in terms of how we will move forward on that. And basically, this would be the overall in terms of what would be happening on the site events of the energy. I wouldn't go into those that are, I think the list is almost exhausted. So that would be the side events in terms of the energy sector. As I've indicated, that this reflects the work of the external committee. The final program would include all the key people who are participating on this, and the invitations in relation to the all the relevant committees to the energy sector are en route, would be coming in 2 weeks' time, because we are almost finalizing that. And also we will be requesting your participation in depth to guide the process further, not only focusing on South Africa but on Africa in terms of how do we make sure that we agree as a continent. Thanks.
Thank you very much, Chief Director. TDG, anything you want to add? Honourable members, it's open for questions, discussions, or recommendations. No one. Okay. Honourable Gamera, I just wanted to compliment you on briefing the members. So, Honourable Gamera.
There are questions that I'll just seek some clarity. And others, if you feel you won't answer them, the DG won't answer, that's fine, that's okay. Firstly, are we going to meet the targets of access to energy? Just either way, just an honest answer. The second one is, the reports are saying South Africa is now second in Africa with the emissions. Now, after Nigeria, is this true? Is it because Nigeria is emitting more, or are we doing something, we're lessening our emissions? What would be the correct perspective? Thirdly, is there any scientific research or study that South Africa is a water scarce country? People keep on saying it, and we have a lot of mountains and a lot of rain, and they just run through to the sea. To me, it doesn't mean the scarce water scarce country might not be having catchment. But I just want to find out your angle. Lastly, this might be controversial, but I have to raise it. There's a saying that he who plays the piper plays the tune. Is this true in this instance? And as a country, where do we stand in this? Most of the things are funded, whether by UN or IRENA and so on. Where do we stand as a country? Thank you.
Any more questions? Okay. Chief Director.
Okay. I would start by answering the one on the target. In terms of meeting the target, let me just take us back a little bit in terms of the commitment that South Africa made at Copenhagen, COP15. The president committed the country that we will meet the target in terms of 34% by 2020, 42% by 2025 under business as usual, subject to financial resources. And that position has been like that to indicate that we may not have all the financial resources, the skills that are required to meet those targets. So it was clearly articulated that if we don't have financial resources, we may not be able to meet the targets. But if the financial resources are there, definitely we will meet the resources, the targets. And one of the key debates for COP17 is to come up with a design for this green fund, to say the green fund, how would it be assisting developed countries, which we are one of those. And like if in December there is an agreement that definitely all of us are going to benefit out of the Green Fund, I see as achieving the target, because it was clearly articulated that subject to available resources, and resources was not meant as South Africa only being able to pay its own goals. Because when we're talking about economic development, it's not only about South Africans. We do partner with the international world. So hence, we need they need to come to the party. Because in essence, they are the most emitting. They would not only be assisting South Africa, but assisting the carbon footprint for the world as well. And number two, in terms of the water scarce country, yes, South Africa is a water scarce country. If you look at the research done even by the Department of Water Affairs, in terms of our own aquifers, we are limited in terms of the available water. Hence, the process of the water licensing is not as easy as one may anticipate, because when you apply, hence at times they need to reflect on the allocation that is already there to say, how much water are you using? The allocation that you're not using, can we distribute it to others who may need it? So there is always a reflection in terms of even the allocations that are already done to take that back and distribute it to the needy ones. And in relation to the say on who pays plays the tune, I would not say we are not playing the tune in this instance. We need partnership in learning from those who have already developed. But there is a South African position paper in terms of the issues that we are bringing to COP17. Hence, I said, in terms of the South African position paper, it's environmental affairs that is leading that, but we are party to that in terms of making sure that the energy sector is focused and is implementing our policy position as a country. Besides that, we are an affiliate to other international partnerships or bilateral. South Africa ratified the IRENA statute. Hence, there is a need, for IRENA to assist us. One of the key programs that IRENA is doing is to make sure that developed countries get on speed with the implementation of the clean energy sector. And South Africa, I indicated that because we have already approved the integrated resource plan, we have already moved a mile as compared to what other countries within the continent have done. No other country has, produced an integrated resource plan. And if you look at the target that we have set in terms of making sure that we have got 42% by 2030, it's an ambitious target, but we have always been clear that subject to available resources, we're getting there. If you look at, what we have already achieved in terms of the process that was, debated or deliberated in detail for full 2 years, like the renewable energy feeding tariff, we needed to make sure that, we get to the point of making sure that the processes are done properly. In line with learning from those who have already implemented, like Spain, Germany, these are the processes that we will learn through IRENA. So they're not coming to the party to come and tell us what to do. They're coming to the party to assist us to move in relation to meeting the Millennium Development Goals, these UN targets that are set within what the South African position is. So it's a tool in aligning ourselves in terms of available resources. The fourth one, what was it? Okay, in terms of comparing Nigeria and South Africa, the market, the economic development within the two countries, yes, we are emitting. We are second to Nigeria in terms of the statistics. But I need to highlight the point that as we're implementing our IRP, we would even drop down, because we have already taken a major step in terms of introducing the renewable energy sector, and they have not done that as well. They're still dependent on, mostly coal as well, and the emissions would go up as they are not injecting or generating energy from clean energy.
Thanks. Thanks, Chairperson. I think the in terms of comparing countries, sometimes it depends what you use. If you use GDP or you use per capita and so on. So it can change depending on what was used. And I believe that probably in this instance, what was used is basically what Nigeria, in terms of the quantum of CO2 that is emitted, and that basically comes from the flaring that is there, in the oil wells in Nigeria. As soon as they ban flaring, which is what they are moving to, actually those emissions will come down quite considerably. But I think I'd like to believe that probably another fact was used there in terms of comparing us to Nigeria. I would like to believe that per capita, if that was the case, probably the outcome may be different. But Chair, Honorable Members, I think it's important to say that the COP17 is not without contestations and major contestations, and some of which will play themselves most probably in the side events more than in the negotiating rooms themselves. Hopefully not, but some usually play themselves in the streets. By the time you get to the conference itself, the positions have already been agreed. I think it's important that the representatives of our people basically would need to also indicate what, you know, the bottom line is, what are the things that cannot be compromised on behalf of the people of South Africa. And I think that then strengthens the negotiating position to say that, you know, if you go in there, you don't go in there and give up, you know, the position that the president, for example, had outlined, that yes, we'll meet the target, but we must get the financial assistance. A lot of people may want us to be dropping that condition, and which is something that I believe, you know, South Africa needs to guard jealously, that condition is never dropped at any point in time, because it is a costly business. But as indicated, some of the briefings perhaps may have to, some of the issues may have to be discussed. And consensus reached from a South African incorporated position, not necessarily from where people sit in terms of constituencies and so on. Thanks. Chief Director.
Okay, one of the things that I want to highlight is it should be noted that it would be a different process as opposed to the other COPs. We participated as a party in other COPs, but for this year we are a host. So we have got a duty in terms of welcoming the world and the negotiation at a higher level of making, I mean, coordinating the negotiation process by all the parties. But we still have a process in terms of South Africa as a party. Our position is not going to be compromised by our coordination process. And all the sectors would be led by the political principles to make sure that the position of the country is not being sold at our expense. So your participation in terms of guarding against the South African position would definitely be sought at all levels. So the deployment in terms of participation may be earlier than you anticipate. In most instances at other COPs, the political principles arrive in the last week of the final negotiations. But being the host, it may be that you are required to be there even 2 weeks before or a week before to make sure that the policy issues, the policy position is taken care of in terms of the initial negotiations towards the final position. So I'm just trying to allay the fears in terms of making sure that the country position is guarded against any external factors. So we have our position as a country, but we have a duty in terms of being the president of COP17, of making sure that we coordinate the views and the deliberations thereof. Thanks.
Magahari.
Thanks, Jefferson. I want to ask a question on the program, even though it's to be finalized. Number 24, I can see that there will be a clean technology award. So I just want to know what is it that has been done in South Africa, because we are always losing, to encourage them so that we also form part of those who will be getting the awards. Thank you.
Okay. This side event. Sorry.
You say we are all losing. Are you talking about the Springbok? Oh, okay. This award has nothing to do with the Springboks or Boko Boko or Bafana Bafana not qualifying for the AFCON. Eh? Okay. Over to you, Chief Director.
Okay. The Clean Technology Awards is led by the DTI, Department of DTI, in terms of the technologies that we have within the South African context. So business would be participating in relation to the best practices within the technology as wide, energy, water, like all the sectors would be represented. So we also participating on this. It's national based, it's not international, as in we don't have international participants, but the South African participation. Thanks.
Okay, now you know. Members, you've got the story now. Are there any more questions? Let me just go around the table here, Honorable Nyambi. Nothing, Bernie? Okay. Honorable Dikhali, accept the award? Nothing? Okay. Honorable Abrams? Madam Dinizulu? Mr. Maslango?
Honorable Gamere?
No. Nothing? Dr. Conroy? You're fine. Okay. Now, members, as you heard now, you might be expected to be ready 2 weeks before the start of the event. So if you plan of getting married or plan of going overseas or plan of maybe going into labor or anything like that, please cancel till after COP 17. If you plan of taking honeymoon, Honorable Nyambi, please cancel till after COP 17. The DDG and your team, thank you very much for the presentation and for bringing us on to speed about what is happening, where we are, and what are expected from us as legislators.